Hello and welcome to the With Onion Soccer podcast, formerly known as Two Dudes, One Ball, because my asshole former co-host Ryan Brown will not be back for another month or two, thanks to his worthless work schedule. I am Michael White here at Michael L. White on Twitter. I am here lovingly joined by great friends of mine. I have Karn here at Chuck Despair 87, Gwyn at Gwinnipeg, G-W-Y-N-N-I-E-P-E-G. I actually said it right this time.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. And my almost adoring wife, Rachel, at Cookie_Ray, if you dare to be her 9th or 10th follow.
Love her.
I think I have more than that. I'm going to check now for everyone that's curious.
She will definitely check, as absolutely. Uh-huh. But here, thanks for joining us. We are here to talk about the lovingly, wonderfully, awfully terrible week that was with the Thorns in their dash postmortem.
For the record, I have 27 followers.
27, you not guys. 9. I'm very sorry.
I have 600 exactly.
I have double digits. I feel like someone that tweets once a month. That 27 means that you and my friends are really lovely, wonderful people who follow me just because you're nice.
How many of pity cool follow bolts?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, those are, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's not good. How do I make them go away?
You can block them. You can block them if you like.
Off the wheels in 1:37. New world's record. Thank you.
Of the 27, only 3 are the weird, crappy things you guys were talking about. The rest of them are actual people. So that means I actually have 24 followers.
I'm proud of you, son.
Thank you.
Okay.
Show notes and links at withonions.com. You can contact me, hatemailforsoccer@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. We are technically still on iTunes. No one knows. It's okay.
That's what I use because I can download it and then listen offline.
So don't rate and review because you are technically on the podcast now, and that's a lack of journalistic integrity fault.
Don't worry, I never do it for anything I listen to.
I don't even do the ones I like. I'm angry Monday morning when they're not out yet, and I still won't review them. No, yep.
Karin gives direct feedback and is highly
She valued. Did. She was the first and only person to have a nice email sent to hatemailforsoccer@gmail.com. That is F-O-R, not the number 4.
How much hate has been sent there?
None.
Oh.
But I only get... I'm lucky to get 50 listens a week, and that's only when I'm buzz marketing you or what's that person's name I keep forgetting in Chicago because I disowned her?
Carla,
thank you. Yeah.
We love her.
At PDX44. Well, I'll have her on a future episode as soon as I figure out how to record a Skype conversation.
She's going to come visit us again, please, soon.
She better. She fucking better. I will destroy her. We're going to talk about Thorns, maybe a little bit more on NWSL 2.0 and the future of the league. We're going to go around the league in a quality dumpster dive. Bud Light Breakerita will definitely be discussed.
I'll say dumpster, which is no longer has to be capitalized according to the AP style book. It is now no longer, they're not using it as a proper noun because it's a brand.
I'm glad someone here is of the refined intelligence that I certainly am not. Thank you.
I think they wanted to know for the dumpster fire for that phrase. Dumpster being thrown fire. Out a lot currently.
Yeah, it's a little too commonly used meme. You gotta get out there. Have a little more fun. And beyond that, maybe talk a little bit about general women in sports and whatnot. Maybe I might touch on the most recent WNBA Minnesota Lynx protest and the police reaction because they're a bunch of fucking assholes. But first to the Thorns. That was technically 90 minutes of soccer.
It was 90 minutes of something.
Yes, it was.
It was 90 minutes of something.
What was the nicest thing I had in my notes? I had, someone please get Ojai a goddamn national team cap, please. Because she, in that third goal, basically walked stupid around our entire team.
Yeah, but there's too many forwards in the pool.
We can rotate, theoretically. Well, eventually there will be some sort of mechanism to allow someone under the age of 26 that's not named Mallory Pugh to actually... You know, get in there and see a cap here.
Who was the other Sanchez? Also got called up. What position does she play?
I do not know.
She was another baby.
Sanchez.
She got called up once and everybody was losing it or something. Yes, let's search one of the most common last names.
Well, in this Thorns game.
Ashley Sanchez.
Yes, Ashley Sanchez.
Okay. Ohio's, it's really hard to dig deep into this when you don't want to pay $100 a year for a top drawer soccer subscription.
Yeah. Mm. in this one's game, Ohio was definitely the best player on the field. I mean, she controlled pretty much everything. She created, at least indirectly, everything that the Dash did, and Portland did not have a single player on the team who, or on the field, that looked like they even belonged there with her.
Absolutely. Our somewhat stalwart back line looked completely befuddled with that low and relatively not fast cross coming into the box for the opening goal.
Kat,
even Mengus looked dumb in that play.
Yep. Well, Kat colliding with Betos caused one of the goals, essentially, because Betos couldn't see where the ball was, and I would argue that Betos would get to that ball 7 out of 10 times.
I agree with that. Betos actually pushed Kat out of the way in an attempt to try and get to that, and got a hand on the ball, and I feel like if she hadn't had to make the effort to push Kat, and Kat was just tracking the ball, just got a little turned around and lost, and then Betos couldn't recover early enough. Otherwise, it would have been a fairly routine save.
Absolutely. What would you say of the overall tactic? It seems like for the most of this season, you kind of play it out towards the wings and then try to facilitate back centrally. It's usually worked when you have, you know, someone like Tobin or someone who's composed and knows when no one's around the box to create, or at least when you had Horan and Long, you know, you toss it back centrally to those holding mids and try to pick apart from there, but we don't have anybody that right now.
Yeah, I think what you're seeing right now with the Thorns is that they don't have any of those creative attacking personalities. They don't have somebody who can actually keep the ball and do something with it on their own, much less facilitate within the whole team.
Yeah, it's rough. The last home game, I remember seeing Shim act mostly on the left side and doing what she could to hold the ball up and wait for reinforcements, but it was usually a pass too deep to where she's in no man's land and no one can get there to help. She has to theoretically beat one or two people either off the dribble and go forward and then be further isolated, or just be screwed regardless.
We don't have the players, period. I mean, we had 8 players away on national team duty. We've got one player who isn't 90 minutes fit currently, which is Kat. And then we were further hit by the fact that Dagny needed to miss for some form of family commitment. That leaves us with 11 professional players. 2 of those professional players are goalkeepers. I mean, unless we're going to throw Betos out into the midfield or something, we can't even start a fully paid roster.
Yeah, throw French center back, see what the fuck happens, right?
Yeah. at this point, honestly, I'm not sure I'm that opposed to it.
Considering her distribution, it's improved a lot, but her distribution isn't as good as Betos's. So I'd much rather have Betos out and keep Fianch in goal, because I think Fianch can do a better job.
Maybe. Betos has had her moments where she's scuffed some things.
Yeah,
she's gotten better. They both have.
Absolutely. They've definitely improved.
Oh, Angra, the things she's worked on, she seems to be really good at identifying people's weaknesses and working on them.
Yeah, I mean, I do think missing Brigna's daughter was a really big thing, because she was, even with all of the national team players that have been called up to their respective teams for the Olympics, she was actually still a standout player during that time. And so missing a player of her caliber really hurt the team, because, that forced them to start a player that I played against in co-ed rec 6 days before.
Yeah, that's nuts. That kind of leads into your a thought I hadn't thought of until you brought it up, was with these amateurs like Fitzgerald coming in, and we don't have any academy set up regardless of what the press release is telling us for, you know, decades down in the future.
That says in the future we will have.
A magical future.
The year 2000.
It doesn't mean anything's going to come of it, though.
Well, there is
right now when they actually need the amateurs.
Yeah, there is a league that exists for these players to be playing in, and some of them could be. There's 2 teams in the Portland area in the WPSL.
Oh, that's right.
It's not the highest level in the world, but it's certainly better than co-ed rec. And I've played in both, so I can speak from experience, because I played in the WPSL a couple of years ago.
Oh, wow.
And it's not the greatest team, but at least you have some, like, trainings, we don't practice for our rec team. I don't think any of the other teams.
We do.
We practice.
We also practice in the sense that, I mean, some of us are, you know, like Chelsea would probably be fully fit, one of our best players, but the best will in the world, she had knee surgery in April. like?
Well, most of the players in the league that I'm in, we're playing outdoor once or twice a week and indoor two or three times a week. So there's no time we could schedule a practice if we were going to do it. And I think that's the same, at least for, that player in particular that I played against. But the WPSL is a far more organized, higher level than the rec. And you play against teams from, it's mostly regionalized. But I think that that's something that the NWSL needs to get more of the teams involved with. Mm-hmm. I do believe that some of the teams that have like their reserves.
Spirit Reserve, Boston Reserve. Yeah,
I think they play in divisions of the WPSL. Since the W League has folded, that's really all that is left that could provide that. But if you're going to have these players come in and play at the highest level in the country, they need to be playing somewhere to get ready for games.
Yeah.
Because the other stuff, it doesn't prepare you. The speed is so drastically different.
Yeah. And as much as everyone in preseason was falling in love with Sade Pratt and her, athleticism and agility out of the wing, she and her, substitute appearance, I think she, last game or two, is just hasn't been cohesive with the rest of the unit. And you can't really blame her. I'm rewatching the game frustrated by her, but I can't be frustrated by her when it's a cohesion and practice situation.
Well, one of the, our offense was obviously, it was a wash. We didn't score any goals. We didn't really even have that many chances. And absolutely. Especially after Houston settled, because in the earlier parts of the game, we did see some of it, and then they settled. But especially with, our back line, we had some consistency with Mengus and Sonnet, and then Sonnet is an alternate, so we didn't get that. And we've had so many injuries and so many changes with our fullbacks. Like, I was going through the roster. We have 8 different players we've used as fullbacks in, 13 games? And, 7, because one of them has been, concussed since the beginning of the season. 7 and 14 games. One of them's got a broken hip. One of them played fullback for the first time, I think, actually at the match. Weber was essentially told, oh yeah, you haven't played this position before. By the way, we need you to be our fullback. And she did a really good job of it, but, we now need her in our attacking range, because with a roster of 20 players, when we've got 7 players away.
Yeah. You're making every head coach become a tinker man. Yeah. You're not allowing the only word I'm coming out of my brain, but the cohesion, you're not going to have a situation where a Ranieri is going to allow the exact same rotation for 20 straight games and the same substitute patterns, where he's treating his entire roster like a bullpen of 7th, 8th, 9 people. No. Parsons got to basically, it's as if these MWSL coaches are, waking up randomly Saturday morning and saying, what do I have to work with? Okay, let's see what piece fits where.
Yeah, and Colin mentioned that, somebody on Twitter, they were saying, this is how Parsons will prove he's different to Riley, but Parsons has got an even worse hand than Riley, because, Riley was missing 5 or 6 starters, depending on whether you want to count Kaelin Kyle as a starter.
Mm-hmm.
And we're missing a straight 7 now, and he was missing 8 in that match. And, luckily we've got some consistency with our goalkeeper, and, either of our goalkeepers are, you can pick up Franchuk, you can pick up Bezos, and they're going to be some of the best goalkeepers in the world.
Yeah. It seems like Riley learned from that with the Flash, because Sanderson, GB team. Williams won't see the light of day despite her 7 goals and crazy scoring efficiency.
McDonald.
Yeah.
He seems to do better under pressure, if that makes sense. He seems to do a lot better job when he's got less resources to him, because he seems get in the mud. I don't know if that makes any sort of sense, but he's a get in the mud kind of guy. I think it came across, it was awful what he said to Harvey, we're going to tough up and we're going to play on whatever you put us on, but that kind of seems to be how he coaches, if that makes sense. He needs the challenge.
He does best when he has complete control.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest difference in the Western New York team versus the Portland team of last year, is he has, for the most part, a lot of younger players who aren't established. They don't have large egos for good or for bad, and they are not, so they're not going to butt heads with him at all. They're not going to challenge him. Yeah. He has his way.
They don't have aspirations.
Excellent ways.
That makes sense.
Yes and no. I mean, I'm not, because when I talk about like the egos of the other players, I'm not saying it's good or bad, but they have opinions and are established in enough that they're willing to share them. They might question their coach, and that's not something that he takes well to.
Well, the other piece is what I was just gesturing to Karin is last year, the players that were gone for longer. So while this is hitting us really hard right now, the advantage is theoretically this will be a shorter lived chunk of time, because not all of the teams will be making it all the way through. I mean, the majority of our players are on the U.S. team, but it is such a short window once it actually gets starting. I mean, it starts on the 3rd, and I think when is the last, like the 19th?
Yeah.
Is the final. So, I mean, that really, once the Olympics get going, it's this piece right now.
The NWSL is taking a break anyway. We play on July 30th, and we don't play again till like
the 27th of August.
Yeah, the end of August. My big concern is potential victory tour or other tour.
Well,
in which we will still lose players just because they can take them away.
But at the same time, you know, when there were celebrations and things, you'll notice that the Portland players, on average, headed back to their clubs quicker. I mean, regardless of people's personal feelings on Kaylin Kyle, she was one of the first people to get, you know, back with her club and back training.
Well, the Canadians were way better about it than...
I don't want to get hopeful on the whims of the players or on the health of their ankles, because we got fucking 8 days between the final or the third place final day, and theoretically the only stinking time we're going to see the national teamers play the fucking rain. Yeah, thank you. God.
That's true. Yeah, they've missed, because they'll be missing the game on the 30th. They missed the first game. Uh-huh. They missed this last. I mean, yeah, it's hilarious, actually.
It feels like a goddamn conspiracy.
I mean, honestly, all I can do is laugh at the schedule for that, because they're having Portland and Seattle play so many times because it's a rivalry that exists naturally, because the cities, especially in terms of sport, don't like each other.
Yeah.
And yet, the teams will never actually have their best players to play it.
Yeah.
It's kind of hilarious.
Enjoy the unbalanced schedule. We're going to rip it the shreds of what it means right from underneath you at the last goddamn second.
I mean, it's a horrible joke on the NWSL.
Of course.
They're trying to build up this whole thing, and it's just not working for them.
They treat the schedule like I treat my homework. You know, Sunday afternoon, 6 hours before deadline, for fuck's sake.
What do you mean?
You give them that much
time? You do it the morning of the class. You wake up, half an hour earlier.
I actually typically am like bull run through my homework during like the Sunday afternoon Timbers game. So I literally forget what the fuck's going on during the Timbers game.
Good to know you pay attention.
Yeah.
That's why you have to have dual screens in our household. One to do homework and one to watch sports.
Fair enough. What do you think, how do you think the table will look coming out of this?
I was excited after the start of the end of June, beginning of July, thinking, get a couple more draws and we'll be at the top. And now I'm like, fuck, we could be third in a nanosecond.
Do you think we have enough time, though, to gain back up to the top of the table before the end of the season?
Tobin's kind of channeled her own sense of Vero second half 2014, the beginning of the season. If she can do that again, maybe we'll be on top again. I don't know.
It'd be hard-pressed to end up on top. I think second is definitely there. Looking at the current standings at points per game, we're in third. The Spirit are first, and they're a fairly significant, you know, because we're tied on points, but they've played two fewer games.
Yeah.
So I think
they played one fewer.
Checking from what I checked today, but
The Thorns this year remind me a lot of last year, Brighton Hove and Albion in the second tier of English men's trying to get into the Premier League. They're undefeated through December 19th. They lose a game, they draw another game, and lose another game. And in those three games, they go from first to third because they drew too fucking many games.
And then the Owls injure them, and...
I mean, really, as long as
and they had to
sign
Knocker.
As long as the Thorns manage to stay in the top four, I think they have a legitimate chance to win it all.
Yeah.
With the roster that they should have at the end, if they make the playoffs, they can win it.
Who do you think will make the playoffs?
I think the Spirit are a lock.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I do think that the Thorns will stay in the top four.
Do you think Seattle will make it up there in time?
I have a hard time seeing it at this point.
They have to stop dropping points. Dropping points at home to...
Because I think that Western New York is going to be in the top four.
And
the way they're playing.
And then, playing great.
Yeah,
are
and
you
then,
serious? They're the team that makes me
I think Red Stars,
right
Sky
now.
Blue, you know, it could
I
be
think,
a fun fight for fourth.
I think it's going to be a
Sky
battle,
Blue?
But
yeah.
They're fifth right now. And in both the standard standings and by points per game. But I think Chicago will probably end up edging Sky Blue. I think that their experience and overall talent will end up being the determining factor. So I think your current top four will end up being your top four.
Yeah.
But the order could change.
I've had so much fun, though, watching the Sky Blue games with, you know, midfield. They're not that strong outside of Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
But Tasha Kai, just the physicality is it's so great to see that type of center forward who can out-muscle. She could probably out-muscle two people on her back at once. She really can hold up the play long enough for anyone to help out on a counterattack, even if it's a slow plodding counterattack. Mm-hmm. She could sit there for 20 seconds, 50 yards from the nearest midfielder and be like, I got this.
Well, I think she kind of brings to the Sky Blue team what like Ella Masar had brought to Houston.
Mm.
You know, that player with just a little bit of bite to him that is really in a lot of ways your emotional leader. And I think teams, especially those that are, you know, trying to make that practically like worst up jump, you need players like that. Mm. You need someone that is going to rally everyone around them.
Yeah. And player that takes that adversity and comes out angrier rather and no
mm-hmm.
wilting.
Yep.
Well, I figure that might as well cover it for Thorns ish related stuff.
It died to death.
One thing I didn't get to in the last podcast that I kind of want to get to, we can talk other stuff if you read those NWSL 2.0 articles, is I want to get the quote from it. But it really irritated me. Women's sports, it's in a situation where solidarity needs to be the key, at least from the way I see it. And it's partially brought by how everything's treated. You know, I hate the rain and whatnot. But the one thing that and irritated the shit out of me is when they're talking about union situations with the rain. And I think it was tape player was this?
Winters?
Keelan Winters was the one who was talking about it.
I called it the I Got Mine Syndrome, where we have it really good and we have it so good. And until now, until that Western New York game, I never felt like I was disrespected. I never thought, you know, we needed a players union. What the fuck? Just because you and your, you know, 20 other friends are having a really cool time while everyone else might be fucked, or you're not talking with other people in Orlando or Boston. It's like, what?
Yeah. Well, the thing that bothered me the most about that is that she actually and other players have said that they know that other players are not getting respected in the same way. But as you're saying, because they're like, well, it's good for me, so I don't really care.
That'd be like me and Rachel here be like, yeah, we just bought our house last year. Fuck, I don't remember anything about renting and how hard it was and how expensive it was. La, 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 whatever. Okay, I don't really care.
Isn't she one of the players who also plays in Australia, Australia's W League, to, you know, make her rent and keep her fitness up?
Yeah, you'd think that, I don't know, she would understand the travails and shit.
She's on a team over in Australia with some of those players who, you know, do come from those teams, you know, who aren't as well off. She's not a stupid woman.
Yeah.
Like, you would have thought she would have seen at some point that, oh, this is happening to my peers. Oh.
I think there's just a lack of understanding of the purpose of a players' union and what it actually does. I mean, you look at some of the other sports in the United States, and who are the player representatives on the unions? It's some of your biggest name players.
Yeah.
Players who could easily say, well, I got mine.
LeBron James is the president of the NBA.
Exactly. That's a great example. You know, he could very well end up signing a contract that's going to pay him $30 million a year. And he makes well over $100 million with other endorsements.
Yeah.
He doesn't need anything. And yet he's still there working for the guy who's on the lowest end of the salary stuff to make sure that the league functions for everybody. And that's where I think we can get into one of our other topics, that you need the players who are the best well off to fight for the little guy.
I think
that's absolutely
also why it's nice, you know, it would be nice to see some NWSL players, you know, called up more regularly with the US women's team, because if you've ever spoken to Long about this, Long is keenly aware, because, I mean, Long's never been, you know, badly off. She came in and she was considered, you know, a pretty key part of the Thorns by 2014, so she's not going to be, you know, the worst off person, but if you speak to her, she's pretty keenly aware of, you know, the teammates, and whether, regardless of people's personal feelings on Morgan, like, Morgan, the very first season, she made certain that all of her teammates, you know, had cleats to use, because some of them didn't.
Yeah, I think as the pipeline NWSL, the national team, actually starts to solidify and consists of more than two players.
Yeah.
Because Ali Long and Crystal Dunn are the only two players, you can conceivably say that the NWSL made a significant impact on them being selected the national team.
And both in Long Island.
Then, you know, things like that will have more say, but yeah.
It's disheartening when Ellis has that subtle quote saying, I really don't pay much attention to it. It's like, then what was this league for?
You have to wonder how much of her noticing what Ali did is because Ali, you know, did what young professionals should do, and she kept on, you know, asking for input, you know. Here's me, here's how I'm playing, what can I do to improve, what do you want to see from me so I can make the national team?
Yeah, Ali Long is basically John Cusack and Say Anything with the goddamn boombox outside of the window.
Well, I know some people want to give her, like, flack for all of the self-promotion for in her effort to make the national team, but sometimes that's what it takes. She believed in herself, she was putting in the work, and yeah, if you aren't convinced that people are paying attention, you got to make them.
Well, and that's what you do in other professions.
Yeah,
right? I'm definitely not a professional athlete, but I hire people to work at the hospital. And the people that put in that extra effort, that write you a handwritten thank you card, or they push really hard to actually get you their resume personally, that sticks in your head. There's a reason that you do that in another line of work. So why wouldn't it work in a national team call-up? It should be.
And I mean, even if you get a rejection letter, if it's a job, you know, of any consequence, you're going to ask them, you know, if you can, you know, hey, why didn't I get this job? What can I do to, you know, wow the next guys?
Absolutely. It's a learning opportunity.
Right? Theoretically, the worst they can do is ignore you.
It's essentially a job interview, right? It's a really weird way of thinking about it. It's a job interview.
In a competitive job market.
Yes. Yep.
Absolutely.
So then you would do things differently if you look at it that way versus, I hope someone looks at me. I hope that Jill Ellis watches the NWSL and realizes how hard I'm working, because that's the thing. It really is. It's not thought of in that way. Not thought of in that light of being an interview.
No, you can definitely argue that Jill Ellis should be paying more attention.
Oh, yeah,
definitely. You would hope that in the future, players don't have to take the route that Ali did to make sure that people were aware of her play.
Well, you've also got good players who aren't going to, you know, fight as hard as her because she is a fighter. And I mean, you've got really, really good players. Like, I can't imagine, say, Emily Sonnet. If, you know, Emily Sonnet was really good but not on the national team, I can't see somebody of her personality, you know, sending email after email, you know, weekly for a couple of years, you know, hey, this is me, this is what I'm doing, what can I do to improve, what position do you want to see me in? Oh, do you have any training drills or anything that you want to see me? And
that's an excellent point, because they need to have a system where those outliers aren't ignored.
Yeah.
Is it also a piece that is being looked at that she was being overly aggressive and she's a woman? Would we be talking about it at all if this was a man who had been doing that kind of stuff? Because that's normal when you think about reaching out to a coach and thinking of it more like a mentor, right? Mm-hmm. Ali maybe was using Jill Ellis as a mentor and a resource to develop her game herself, regardless of what the outcome was.
I think her confidence in general is part of a reason a lot of people hate her, because she's not confident in, you know, the PR-friendly Alex Morgan way. Alex Morgan is confident, but she's like, oh, hi, this is me. And she's of a, you know, sold package. Whereas Ali isn't. Ali can be a little bash. And she's going to get in your face if she can, because, as I said, she's somebody who's a fighter.
I can see that tidbit of information of what led to her more caps being, I don't know, like someone like a bit of an editorial add-on. some like I can see someone like Dan Lauletta being frustrated mm-hmm. with the whole situation and maybe adding that as a little aside to everything. Like, it took us forever to get, you know, quarter information on the Sirmani ousting and what was causing it. And you started to hear, well, maybe there was a person or a vibe that he wasn't liked, but that's where it died.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So everything has, you know, every bit of sourcing can live or die based on what the author chooses to give us. I wish we could get more, obviously, in all these cases, but then you obviously start to destroy your ability to interact with the ownership and other vehicles.
Yeah, there's a very fine line of what you can say to maintain your access and things like that. But there's also, you know, what is your obligation to report?
Yeah. Like, Dan Lauletta can say Jeff Plush is slow to respond to situations like the Western New York Flash thing. I can say he's an irrevocable taint job who's probably fucking around on the golf course and receiving forwarded phone calls about what's going on at this entire situation.
Who do you think actually runs his Twitter? I feel sorry for, you know, that poor poor media intern who has to read, you know, the angry barrages of tweets to the Jeff Plush. Oh, actually, does anybody even pay attention to that Twitter anymore? Did they create it and just leave it there?
Well, he tweets about as often as Peter Gammons, the Hall of Fame writer for MLB Network, has a butt dial tweet. So I wonder if it's just a forwarded translation of Peter Gammons' butt dial tweets, where he's like, and then Jeff tweets, really good showing there for Orlando in the opening match. I'm really impressed. # something.
Thinking of the, you said the I got mine syndrome in amateur pay and things. It was interesting because I can't remember the article now, but there was somebody who had gone through and looked at, you know, the finances for the women's national team, and there was something which implied that if the NWSL didn't exist, the female players would be paid more.
The national team players?
Yeah, the national team would be played more because, I mean, I understand, you know,
Hashtag content, because they're probably playing a quarter more games, theoretically, and then they negotiate more per game match.
Because
play,
the money for the NWSL is being directly taken from their revenues, and it's viewed as, like,
That's not possible because the current collective bargaining agreement that the women's national team is working under
the MOU,
signed. Well, yes, they have the memorandum of understanding, but the collective bargaining agreement that is referencing was signed like 8 years ago.
Well, it was talking about bonuses and things, I think. I can't find it. Somebody published an article. It might have been on... It might have been on one of those hack sites, but, you know...
Well, if you find it, we'll talk about it next pod or something.
I feel like it was the...
Okay, we're going to sum it up here. They get shit either way. They don't get paid enough. There's bonuses or like an extra $5 coupon to go to McDonald's, and then you sure as hell better be getting the dollar menu, so don't be in Alaska or Hawaii, because if someone that grew up in Alaska, the dollar menu doesn't
exist. Well, you're Fitzgerald and you just got out of a pickup game, so you get 4 McChickens to get your caloric outtake for the day.
Perfect.
And then you die of heart disease because of all the sodium.
So maybe you do need to have a McDonald's gift card, because it's the only way they can get enough calories.
I'm loving
a day.
It.
That's true. Shout out to McDonald's.
Didn't Feel free to sponsor the podcast.
That was hey, they sponsor the Thorns. That was my post rec soccer. When I played rec soccer through PCC, we would always end up in either Taco Bell or McDonald's.
Yeah.
Not like every other soccer player who goes to Subway.
No.
That is the youth cap, like soccer capital. You go to a tournament, they're like lines out the door at every Subway that is anywhere near any of the fields.
It's a healthy, quick option, hypothetically.
It's certainly healthier.
Because they have really good cookies.
I always get the cookies instead of the chips, and sometimes I'll ask for 4 cookies, and they're like, are you going to eat that many? And I'm like, yeah.
They're not that big, guys. They're not that big.
Well, plus, you get two, you eat two and you take two home with you.
Okay, we have to get back on topic because Karin and Mike are giving us
I'm to blame. I'm the one that decided.
Well, I went off on McDonald's and then kept going.
I didn't say eat... Oh, just said eat fresh. There we go.
All right, so what's our next topic related that we're actually going to talk about?
Fox Sports 1 and NWSL, a high-needs pact made in soccer heaven.
Well, thank you for reading off the only thing I wrote. Yeah. So, this was an article that reminded me... Jason Whitlock and Colin Cowherd, two asshats from ESPN who talk about nothing, have their new show on FS1. They were hired for millions of dollars to try to revive Fox Sports 1's awful ratings, and they haven't done it yet.
I'll just say, weren't they hired to try and make as many people mad as possible?
Are they the men who were fake apologizing about everything? Can they mention Poughkeepsie? And all I can think of is the way that guy said
Jason
Poughkeepsie.
Whitlock is a... he's an African-American male, but he's a lot like Bill Cosby in the sense that he's an apologist for the things that are occurring. Like, he'll sooner defend a white cop shooting a black man and blame it on rap music than say... you know, defend anything happened recently.
He's an Uncle Tom.
He pretty much is an Uncle Tom, yeah. But he's got to say it in like 4,000 words and say he learned this living in the streets of Detroit. And Cowherd's been defacing John Wall's life for 8 years, being a relatively quiet black male point guard in the NBA.
They sound like charming people.
Oh, they absolutely are. They have a new show called Speak for Yourself, but it's only called All Take. But they only refer to it on Deadspin when they're referring to the ratings as All Takes Matter, which is obviously would have been a much better choice for these two fucking black baiting assholes.
Isn't that what this podcast should be called, though, really? All Takes Matter.
It would be No Takes Matter based on the viewership. you guys have actually bumped up the ratings recently by me saying you'll be on. But the point I was getting to, FS1, terrible ratings across the board. But they do have lots of access to, except for NASCAR, they actually have NASCAR ratings. But they have access to most of the national team friendlies. A lot of, you know, they're the heaviest soccer network in existence right now. And we've had, and WSL's had short-term deals with them the last 2 years. Still pissed off that they didn't make it a full season deal, even though they talked about it in April.
What games are they showing this year? We've already got that info, don't we?
Yeah.
It's at the very end of the season. There's like a couple regular season games and then the semis and the final.
Yeah, and it should just be like last year, only at the venues where they have decent facilities
to
do it.
Yeah, I think that there's like one game each at Toyota, Providence, and Compass.
BBVA, yeah.
Which actually would be, well, we were talking before the podcast, which was interesting about how, you know, if you're filming at larger stadiums and things that are already set up, you have the camera equipment and things available. However, if they were to show games at some of the smaller facilities with the current focus on women's soccer, given some of the things that have come out recently in the post as well, it'd be really nice to see, okay, this is legitimately what the women are playing on right now, and have that in a more visual way.
One thing that's annoying me, or that annoys me and would be great for FS1 is lately what they've been doing for weekend programming, if it's not a nationwide, you know, the second tier NASCAR thing that they do on Saturdays, they're doing MLB Whip Around, or they moved what used to be the Fox Sports, the local Fox affiliate game to like an afternoon slot between 2 and 7 Pacific time. So they're struggling to fill air with live programming, especially during the summers once everything else is done, Champions League or whatnot or blah, blah, blah. It's like, throw a bone to the league. I don't know what the deal was last time, but it seems like it's not you're paying the league to air the games. It's like you're paying the costs and then airing them for virtually nothing.
There were two rumors. One was that it was, you know, a no pay, no pain sort of deal. So yeah, there was really no money there. And the other rumor was that the NWSL had to offer some money to get Fox to play. And I don't know if there's any validity to that rumor, but that was the rumor being bandied at one point.
Well, it's kind of pay to play, but in a marketing sense.
I mean, that doesn't... So Fox had a hugely successful Women's World Cup.
Yeah.
Because they put all of their resources into it and treated it like a major event.
Absolutely.
When you treat something like a major event, people respond as if it's a major event.
Yeah.
So they have there's the potential. They could, you know, get something like that with the NWSL. Obviously, it's not going to be at the same scale. But if you actually show games, you do lead-ins to them. I mean, ESPN's ratings are going up for the MLS,
mm-hmm.
And this week they're going to be doing SportsCenter on the Road in Portland.
Yeah,
it is the first time they have ever done SportsCenter on the Road for an MLS game. They're treating it like it's something major, and their ratings are improving. you treat something like that, you put some resources into it, you get more out of it.
Well, it's like, a certain amount of, and people are going to use the term bandwagoners, but I know some people from, you know, Portland metro areas who, you know, they kind of knew about the Timbers, but they didn't really know about the Timbers until they won championships, so they actually started paying attention.
Hey, I'll take all the bandwagon fans.
As
for the league, yeah. Individual teams, individual players, don't care, just follow.
As dumb as a pregame show being aired on the road is, and how worthless it would be, how relatively worthless it is as a gimmick for the network, people get up for shit like that. You know, college game day, basketball or football wise, in the collegiate sphere. You know, I did the stupid, they came to our campus and everyone tented out for the first time ever. They go to, you know, Duke, and it's chaos. They go to a Stanford football game.
Everyone wants their chance to, you know, act like an idiot on national television.
Exactly.
Well, wouldn't it be fun for the supporters groups?
Like, yeah, really? Oh, can you imagine? They're going to be out there, because they're usually, when they do this, they actually have, desk out where people can be around.
Oh,
and they're going to, they'll be a presence.
Oh, there will be enough of a presence that there will be.
Yeah, there'll be assholes waking up at 4:30. We got to get in the line to be in the first two rows behind the desk for MLS pregame.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to throw a spitwad at Alexi Laws. Oh, wrong network. Sorry.
Wait. You mean I would do that without views, to be fair? Just give me.
I'd be up all night if I had a chance to bring a razor and try to shave a bad patch of hair into Kyle Martino's head if I could, you know.
But it would be really nice if, Fox Sports would do a little bit more for the NWSL, but also that if we could actually see evidence that the NWSL is working to try and accomplish something. Because with the TV thing, the contract that they have with Fox Sports 1 is non-exclusive.
Yeah.
They are allowed to negotiate with other networks and things to get other games on the air, and we have zero evidence that they are even attempting to do so.
I thought Orlando were now being played on their local network. Most of the Orlando Pride matches have been played on their local network.
I know Chicago
Bright House.
Doing that.
But, Bright House has no pull outside of Southern Florida, for shit's sake.
Yeah, but if you can get, somebody on the outreach of Southern Florida to be like, oh, this looks cool, there's people, there's flags, I'm going to go check
it out.
So if
you get, Central Florida Knights football fan that's still drunk 4 months later to watch a game, sure, yeah.
Yeah, get them, even if you get them in for one game.
Yeah. Stumbling into Citrus thinking it's a football game? Is that an American football game? Is that what we're going for?
Absolutely.
Hey! They sell beer,
maybe a Florida Gulf Coast University student just got out of their ether frolic and needs to have some quality hashtag content to keep the buzz going.
Took a women's studies class and, is now deeply involved.
Mm-hmm. So we talked in the general sense about the playoff picture and how scared we are.
I want to know what you're talking about when you say Bud Light Jacob Eater.
Well, I have the article up here. You might have seen it. Jennifer Gordon was tweeting at the Mostly Spirit writer, and I lost it already. Bud Light is trying to bring in the cool kids, the 21 to 30 demographic.
You mean with
by partnering with Budweiser?
Wait a minute, though. Are there 21 to 30 year olds?
Breakers team with Bud Light to target young demographic.
Huh.
Yeah.
Hey, they could get Chelsea's support.
If you like Limerita and hashtag anything goes, or what was it? What was the weird creepy hashtag?
You know who likes Lime Bud Light? Ditchwell.
It's actually called Bud Light Lime. You gotta say it correctly.
I would never drink it. You could not get me to put that in my mouth.
I suppose, yeah. But I don't know. The great tweet that the spirit writer said was, Portland's got its own fucking microbrew named after it in the same color sphere of a cider as the team, and the Breakers have to resort to a major conglomerate of bullshit.
On the plus side, Bud Light has a lot of money. Are you serious? It's Budweiser. They have ridiculous.
If you're up for anything, theoretically, you're up to showing up to Boston losing 4-1.
Yes, well, that's the important part is we need more sponsors. I don't care where they come from, and Budweiser is a huge sponsor.
Oh, yeah, I'm not knocking it.
I mean, for us being in Portland, we absolutely have to knock it because it's Bud Light. However, it would be a major sponsor. But It's like, to me, the only way it gets bigger than Budweiser is getting Coca-Cola in there, too, because they sponsor everything.
Hey, Boston has had the biggest attendance improvement this year out of any team in the league. Even though they've been getting drubbed almost every single game, people are actually showing up.
I know people who've shown up to Boston matches and then gone home crying, but they went back to the next match, so I guess.
Well, but you don't root for a team because they're going to win every time. If you're a fan, you know, think about it, right?
But it's Boston, it's just heartbreaking at this
point. Oh, come on. Seriously, the Boston fans? Okay, if you're a Boston soccer fan and you think you have it bad, you have to look at any of the other Boston sports teams. Like, I don't know, let's talk about the Boston Red Sox before 2004, and then let's talk about fans that have it hard.
I talked about
it
with you. Well, if you're a Boston women's sports fan, you're probably also following all the schools, and the schools have typically been very good with their women's sports.
Wait, look at Boston College. Seriously? You have good.
I don't know
that that is necessarily true. That if you are following the Breakers, that you would follow like Boston College or any of those other teams. You might be, but I don't. I think we make assumptions with the fans for women's soccer far too often about where the overlaps are. It's like assumed that if you follow one women's sport thing, you follow everything else that is even remotely related to that. Whereas we don't really make those same assumptions with male sports fans. We allow for someone to love college football and hate the NFL, or vice versa. And that sort of thing doesn't exist on the women's side. You can't, the way people look at it, be a huge women's college basketball fan and then not care about the WNBA. Or if you care about the WNBA, you really have to follow college sports. Like, it's kind of they assume it's a top-down thing. If you follow the pro sports, people assume you follow college.
I think it's also an assumption of solidarity in the sense that, you know, whether or not you like it and whether or not, for fairness, gender will be built into it. And there's the whole idea that, you know, certain people are going to support women's soccer, not because they like soccer, but because they want to support women. Mm-hmm. And that demographic does also exist. And then you do get people who are going to follow women's sport in any aspect they can.
Well,
yeah, I think there is a significant overlap. I just think we overestimate it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One NWSL writer I followed on Twitter for a while, in between what she would do for the write-ups for the games, she was blitzing with women's softball World Series and the whole tournament lead-up to it. And it's like, okay, I guess technically there isn't a overlap here, but also softball was created as a predicate that women couldn't throw overhand without their arms hurting a lot. And I fucking hate that. And I hate that sport on the premise of itself. There's a growth of women's baseball. The women's national baseball team won the Commonwealth Games, I think. Or no, there was a games up in Canada last summer. They won it all. There's three women playing for the Sonoma Stompers collegiate men's team out in California this year. It's like, we don't need to.
Do you think there'll ever be, you know, generalized co-ed teams for baseball?
I think at the lower levels, yeah. Because if you're a guy that likes Legion baseball or high school baseball, you're not really going for velocity.
Okay,
you're not going to see the things that, you know, your average male fan that casually likes a bunch of sports is really going to get up when Aroldis Chapman throws at 105.3 miles an hour, even though he literally can't tell the difference in arm action between a guy throwing 89 and 104. And so that goes in other things like you've said, but it's like, why do you like the top level stuff that you like, or why do you like this or that you like? Is it just because it's been forced on you? Is it because marketing crosses up?
I was heartbroken when I found out that the only woman in the NFL ever had been was a kicker. There's been one woman ever, and she was a...
Are we talking about the former Colorado and University of New Mexico free kick taker whose name eludes me, Katie Nida?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that might be the right person, but yeah, I was heartbroken because little me wanted to be Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, she took so much shit because she got into a really good Colorado program in the early 2000s, the team that made the Rose Bowl a couple times. Mm. But yeah, you know, proto-Midwestern people were all over her. I can't imagine her doing that 14 years later in the Twitter world.
It's so much worse right now. You know, with social media.
Yeah, we just had the situation with the Ghostbusters. Mio Yiannopoulos' minions go after her. The guy who built his career on Gamergate and other women harassment and doxing.
Mm-hmm. And then didn't she get hacked and somebody started retweeting all of them?
She retweeted them.
Well, she wasn't actually hacked. What people were doing is they were like spoofing it. They were creating, like, photoshopping and creating fake tweets to appear as if they were coming from her timeline. But at least one of them, someone was an idiot, and they had the timestamp as being a future date that wasn't...
Yeah.
It was, like, the following day. But, yeah, that's the main thing it was. It wasn't... she wasn't actually hacked. Yeah.
Wasn't part of it, too, that she was retweeting things because Twitter wasn't reacting quickly enough and wasn't taking it seriously, so that she was sharing some of the stuff that was coming at her so that it was recognized. Because if you're not getting an answer from the company and no one's taking this seriously, you're going to be harassed.
Well, and Twitter asks for proof.
Is it?
If someone deletes
they've always been
the tweet,
so slow, yeah.
Yeah.
It's gone and Twitter won't do anything.
Yeah.
But see, there's also a thing like, who's the actor I follow? Let me see if I can find him. Orlando Jones. I don't know if you know him. He's an actor. He's African-American. But he'll occasionally, just retweet really shitty tweets. He gets, to comment on it. But it's really weird because there were rumors that, after the whole Taylor Kimye thing, that, certain people who were tweeting certain things at Taylor Swift were getting their accounts blocked real quickly.
Well, the negative comments on Swift's Instagram were knocked out, but, the attacks going at the Ghostbusters actress were not. I mentioned to you last time, it's like one thing I enjoy of initially following, like, a women's athlete, maybe when she joins the team or if he goes up to a league or creates an account, but you never get really good content from them. Sometimes it's just because they're literally on the field, training field all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't think about, now we're talking about this, I don't really think about maybe these, athletic women who are at the top of their game aren't on Twitter because they don't want to fuck with the fallout if they become popular.
Yeah. Well, what you don't get from most of those people is any sort of dialogue.
Yeah.
Because if they tweet something out, it doesn't matter how innocuous it is, you look down at the replies to them, and 90% of them are about their looks.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, 5% of the rest is all just awful stuff.
Yeah.
And then maybe
5%
is actual people wanting to engage in a constructive way.
Well, you also get hate follows. I mean, even with my small account and things, like, I have a couple of guys who every so often they'll tweet really aggressive ghost stuff at me, and it's like, why?
Yeah, desperate heterosexual men are kind of...
My sister actually had a thing recently. She tweeted something somewhat negative about one of the, I think, Thorns players, it was about a play. It wasn't about the person.
Yeah.
And she got some fanboy replying with a comment about her profile picture, which was a picture of her and her fiance, and her being, and the person being like, "Oh, I bet you're the ugly one."
Oh, Jesus.
And that's the kind of thing that women who have the audacity to comment about sports can pretty much expect.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing,
and it's sad enough when it comes from men, and then sometimes you get it from women, shut the F up, bitch, this is why you, yada, yada, yada. Generally, the word dyke is used at some point.
The one thing that, it's so hard to do, and it's such a weird mental framework for these assholes, but a couple of times, some women soccer writers will quote the person sending them vile shit, but they don't attack them in the right way, and it gives them more of a footing that they never had if they were completely ignored.
Yeah.
Or it enables, boosts up their ego that they're doing something right. If it's like, you can't even come up with a good insult me. Like,
There's a few of the ESPN personalities that fall into that boat of not responding how
Sarah Gerke, former Washington Spirit PR person, did it, I think, last April. She was obviously pretty angry, and I totally respect that anger, but she wasn't, she, it's, you have to own them. You really have to own them. I had one time where someone had sent something vile regarding a SportsCenter tweet about women's sports and Kitchen. So I went through, it's almost like you have to do fucking research. I went through his stuff, and he was a Rutgers football supporter who hasn't won a fucking game in 2 years. So I quoted a style that he had used complaining about the quarterback into him, right at him twice, and he deleted his account in an hour. You have to literally own someone, you have to own assholes to keep them down or to make them disappear.
But see, the thing is, you can absolutely own somebody. You can obliterate them. You can have, you know, 10, 20 people going, oh my God, you fucking destroyed them. But to a certain point, if you're a woman and they don't give a damn about anything you're saying, they're going to see even the world's best come back as a, ha ha, look at her, she's trying to play with us, and it will give them impetus to tweet even more crap at you. There is no way to win with these people because, I mean, you can block them and then they'll find another IP address to send you crap from. You can ignore them, but they're still going to be there. And even if you don't ignore them, somebody else is eventually going to address them.
There's not
much way to win with these people.
If you have a dog sicker, like what Milo is doing, and you respond to him, that's when things get wrong. It's not her fault that she responded, because she probably did. I hope she didn't know who this guy was, because I've known who he is for 2 years, and it's the bane of my soul to know that these assholes exist. But when the dog sicker gets the notion and then brings his cadre with, that's when shit gets wrong. Like, even wronger than it was.
One thing I would say, you were able to shut down that guy.
Yeah, he was a nobody. That's why I was able to shut him down.
But a woman might not have been able to. Even
absolutely.
Tweeting the exact same thing.
Yeah.
They
would
not
care.
Have had the same response.
That's a good point, yeah.
They do not care.
You can do an experiment next time and you can tweet for my account, because then A, there would be a tweet for my account and B, it would be far better than anything that I put together.
Yeah.
I know I made you guys all really want to follow me at cookie_ray. Mm-hmm. Awesome stuff.
I'm kind of just sad I brought this up. Now I feel all vocal.
R-A-E. I can spell that.
R-A-E. Yes. R-A-E. That's true. And cookie normal.
Or even, not really completely on topic, but maybe one of the last things we might talk about here as we hit the hour mark is Minnesota Lynx, definitely probably the most powerful women's sports team outside of Lyon for consistently destroying everything in their wake. They have, you know, they're almost all black African American women. They have the great, you know, standing up for their rights situation after the Castile shooting that happened in St. Paul. Mm-hmm. And maybe I should have expected something like this, because they had the boisterous asshole police union guy defending Darren Wilson after Ferguson. Where you don't realize that these technical PR mouthpieces, you think they're going to be quiet or like subdued, but they're not. And they go, the guy, so they make the gesture with the shirts. Four off-duty police officers that were contracted to add additional security walk off. And then Bob Kroll, the Minneapolis Area Police Association mouthpiece, asshat in this case, he complains about the whole thing. He says we only have four officers working the event because the Lynx have such a pathetic draw. He's bringing in attendance into a situation where he's annoyed that tall black women don't appreciate being pulled over 30 or 40 times in their entire fucking life, when Castillo's pulled over 52 times for driving while black.
I was speaking to my roommate about this, and she had some drunk, stupid white man hitting on her at a party. And the way he decided to go about this was to try and convince her, first off, that white privilege wasn't real. Which, you know, great start, buddy. Great start. But she was trying to explain to him, and she asked, "Are you afraid of the cops?" And he goes, "Oh yeah, man, a year ago, I got a minor in possession charge. I'm totally afraid of them." And she stopped him and she went, "No, listen to me. Are you afraid of the cops? When you see a cop, are you afraid of your life, for your life?" And he goes, "No, of course not." And she goes, "Exactly. Right there is your problem. Every time I see a cop, I'm thinking, you know, where are my hands? What am I doing? What's the politest way to answer them? How calmly can I answer them? How quickly can I get out of this situation? I'm going through every minor traffic law I might have broken. You know, I'm thinking, did I jaywalk yesterday? Is there any proof that I was jaywalking? You know, things like that.
Yeah, it's like every single African-American individual, when Kermit the Fox, a cop, has to be a professional goddamn PR person.
Yep.
When they're, I mean, I get nervous when I'm pulled over. One time I got pulled over designated driving Rachel, and I was nervous.
It was Patrick's Day, and
he said I rolled through a red. It's like, no, I went through the beginning of a yellow.
Yeah, and but, yeah. He definitely was pulled over because it was St. Patrick's Day, and he picked us up from the biggest bar in the town.
But if he saw that I was anything not white, he would have, you know, given me hassle.
Well, I think, so with this specific situation with the Lynx wearing the t-shirts and the police walking off, one thing that I hadn't thought of when I initially saw the story was people discussing how these, sure, they're off-duty police officers, but they're being contracted as security.
Yeah.
And they walked off the job.
Absolutely.
Which is highly unprofessional.
They just left their job. And if they're saying they only have 4 officers contracted out for each game, that means 100% of the officers that were there for that game left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about, like, there's having complaints about the shirt, which also had the Dallas Police Department shield on it.
That was a very...
It had the names of the people who had just been killed by police and also the shield to represent the Dallas police officers.
Yeah.
So they weren't signaling out anything.
No. And they were respecting what a great job Dallas has done in the whole wake of everything awful happening there.
Yeah.
And those shirts...
Full context, absolutely.
Those shirts were very classy shirts. I mean, what did they say? It's accountability starts with us or something on the front.
I believe so, yeah.
Change starts with us. Justice and accountability. Yeah. Nowhere there does it mention specifically anything. And the fact that the police read something specific into it, I think, says more to the police officers rather than the message they were putting across, which was, you know, change starts with us. We need to examine how our justice system works and, you know, why people are being racially targeted still and how we can stop this and, you know, how we can stop maniacs getting guns.
Yeah. I'm not the person to do it, being as what we are in the rating sphere, but one of my favorite basketball-related podcasts are a couple of Minnesota-related writers. And about the halfway point of episode 14, Britt Robson and David Brower, they do, being Minnesota guys, they really cover the whole gamut of all the context of Minnesota and the cop situation. And highly recommended podcast if you ever want to get a little bit deeper into that topic. But that's all I'm going to say on that for that. Just it's... long ways to go for women, long ways to go for African Americans, hell of a long ways to go for African American women, obviously, if you want to.
There's this fantastic quote from somebody about, you know, level of power and, you know, how a lot of men of minorities feel like the only people they can hold power over are black women, so they do.
Yeah.
So it ends up being an awful perpetuation of terrible treatment. Because we like to think that, you know, once people are empowered, they turn around and help the next guy up. And sadly, too often, people who are helped up are made to feel as if, you know, they've got to step on the little guys who are where they were to keep their place in power.
Well, which... if people would just simply help the other people up, communism would have worked.
Absolutely.
Which actually takes us back to our point, I don't know how long ago, about wanting the big name stars in the NWSL to step up and help out the other guys and not say, because I have it nice playing for X club or Y club or I have these endorsements. Mm-hmm. It's that exact philosophy of, what about the girl that's living in a college type situation, I mean, I don't know how many rooms they have in these apartments, but you're squished
sometimes
in there.
Living with host family.
And you know, right? Seriously?
God forbid.
But
all of them are Jeff Van Gundy.
No.
Yeah.
And God forbid, you know, one of those players, that's what I'm still on the watch for. I'm awfully waiting, you know, the time that one of these rookies ends up, you know, with some sort of serious injury.
Yeah.
Because there's not going to be any fair... I can't remember the fancy word, I'm tired, but you know, any fair reparations?
Yeah.
Yeah, reparations for that person, and I've got awful images of it ending in a well, then again, they don't have money to hire a decent lawyer to make a lawsuit out of it, but, you know, some girl or woman ends up with some horrible sort of game-ending, in like, career-ending injury before her career's even started, and, you know, she's not going to get any form of real pay or, you know, real reputation for it.
And the idea of host families for NWSL just makes me sad. These aren't 19-year-old Dominicans playing a three-month summer league. These are, it's a full-length season, training all the time.
And well, the NASL occasionally does, you know, similar things, but...
Yeah.
That's, I mean, also, you know,
they're not top flight by the USSF.
It would have been kind of cool to live with Jeff Van Gundy's family. Like, for
Pancake, what was it? Tuesday? Is Pancake Saturdays or Sundays?
Something like that, yeah, one of the days. I mean, but that's, you know, a long time NBA fan speaking.
Oh, shit.
So.
You just wake up and, you know, grab a coffee and then try to bait him about something terrible thing he did with the Knicks or something.
Shit. I'm sorry, but all I can think of are pancakes. I mean, I want to taste those pancakes. Are they any good?
Karin never would have made it out of the house for what Mike was just saying.
You would literally have died laughing.
She would have been sitting there baiting him the entire time. And just, yes, you would have had abs of steel. I don't know about the rest of you fit-wise, but...
Yeah, for in other situations, not good at all for the league, much less the players.
Right.
That would be a great topic for future. Maybe you can write some down. What would be the top 10 questions you would bait Van Gundy with at morning breakfast?
Ooh, send in what you would say for those that are listening.
Hatemailforsoccer@gmail.com. If you know what basketball is, I know this is a soccer podcast.
Yeah, is there anyone out there that would have?
But
a
you
question?
Got politics and basketball. And I did not mention anything about other Van Gundys that are basketball coaches that may or may not have mustache rights.
And I didn't mention Valencia.
No, you did not mention Valencia. Thomas Mueller. The fact that Mats Hummels is so much better than Sherdan Mustafi. I forget the whole guy's name.
Shodran Mustafi.
Okay.
Shodran Mustafi.
Did he go to Bayern Munich? I can't remember. That will do it for this episode of the With Onion Soccer Podcast. Thank you for listening. You can follow Gwen at Gwennypeg, Karin at ChuckDespear87, me at Michael L. White, my wife Rachel at Cookie_Ray. There's her weird smile. I wish I had a video for that. We'll get work on that.
It's and we love her.
Thanks again for listening. Thank you guys for joining me for whatever this was. It was really fun, whatever it was, though.
This turns into madness.
Oh, thank you. And with that, we bid you adieu. Bye.
Bye.